All right, welcome to week number four in our classes on the Bible and your bank account. And hit a variety of topics. What we're up to is what we're calling the economics of tomorrow, debt and saving. So last week was the economics of today, spending and budgeting, now debt and saving. And I realize at this point there are some stories that you have heard me tell several times, because I only have so many stories, and some of these I've even alluded to in this class on finances, but I have to do it again, and I don't have to, I'm going to, just because the idea of saving, this was such a momentous event in my marriage with Kathy. It was one of those like eye-opening moments. I've probably shared this in other contexts, maybe some here, but it was one of those times that like something I didn't even know about myself, she revealed to be true, and it was just, it just stuck with me ever since. So the walls of our first house that we'd ever owned were this like chocolate brown is what we ended up painting them. The walls were chocolate brown, chocolate, I think that was the color of the paint. And you know, it was 1936, house was built in 1936, original wood flooring. We're sitting on our couches. She's on one, I'm on the other. And we're talking about some kind of financial thing. And we end up talking about saving, and something triggers an awareness in Kathy's mind, and she asked me, perhaps you know this question because I've shared this story before, she asked me, but what are we saving for? And my response, because I remember this moment, there's so many reasons that it sticks in my mind, but part of it was I was just so glib. I was almost like, what a nonsensical question my wife is asking me. What a silly question. We're saving because we're saving. Yes, she says, but what are we saving for? We're saving so that we have it. Like, that's why we're saving our money, so that we have our money. That's the point of saving. You save so that you can have. And she says, yes, but what are we going to spend it on? And I was like, you misunderstand the word. The word is saving. We're saving not so we spend, but so that we save. Like, this is why it makes such perfect sense in my mind. The word itself tells you what it's for. It's for saving. She says, yes, but what are we going to use it for? Like, why would we save? Like, what's the point? And in that moment, it all comes crashing in on me that my perspective of saving is we save so that we have. And we find our happiness and our security. And the reason we save is because I want to have it. Not because I want to use it. Not because of wise stewardship. Not because I've gone to the ant and considered that, like, you know, it's summer, but winter's coming. No, I save because I want to have. And the problem in my perspective about saving is what's being revealed about my heart is I want to have. And the path to having something is by saving. And then I want to hang on to it. And I don't want to spend that. I don't want to spend it today. And I don't want to spend it tomorrow. Here's the David economics of today and tomorrow. The David economics of today is don't spend. And the David economics of tomorrow are also don't spend. Right? Same economics. You just don't spend. Why? Because I want to have it. Right? When we think about saving, there's probably all kinds of both healthy and unhealthy perspectives about debt and saving, maybe even in this room right now. And again, we need to recognize that God's word ends up addressing a lot of our heart issues that have massive consequences for our bank accounts, right? So my issue of I want to save so that I can have was ultimately an issue of several things: control, comfort, and security. So you say, how does the Bible help us figure out what to do with our money? Well, does the Bible ever talk to us about things like control? Who's in? Who has it? Where do you lack it? How do you get it? Does the Bible ever talk to us about comfort? How much comfort you should expect, you should want? Does the Bible ever talk about things like the opposite of comfort, like suffering? How about security? Does the Bible ever talk to us about where our security should be and where our security should not be? And the answer, of course, is yes. When it comes to the issues both of debt and saving, we have to ask ourselves, as we should so many times in our lives, what is it that I want? Because what I want by saving is I want to have. And by having, ultimately, I will have happiness because I will have control and comfort, and I will have security. So what I want by saving is happiness. Listen, any worldly philosophy of money or of marketing or whatever else can teach you to pursue your own happiness. Only the Bible can teach you that you should put your treasure somewhere else. That actually the best place for your treasure is in heaven. And wherever your treasure is, that's where your heart is going to be also. And if our heart is in our own happiness, we will invest our treasure in our own happiness in every which possible way. Now, that's not to deny that God is glorified when we are happy in Him. But the question is, do we find happiness in our selfish pursuit of having and security, or do we find our happiness actually in glorifying God and finding it through God-ordained and God-directed channels? So, as we talk about debt and saving, we are talking about heart issues, all right? There's probably more of us than just me who feel some amount of burden when it comes to money and finances. And why is that? Well, when we talk about debt, you might be feeling the strain of debt, or you might be worried that you're going to face the strain of debt in the future. When you think about saving, and I say saving, you might have a pit in your stomach, like, I'm not saving as much as I want to. How can I get to that? Or you might be looking at your savings, and you're comparing it to a rising cost of living, and you're going, ooh, my savings doesn't look quite as impressive as it did 15 years ago, and you're going, How do I think about this? There is a weight that comes as we think about debt and saving, and it's a weight on our heart. When we think about debt and saving, we're talking about tomorrow, so we need to think about the future and knowing the future. And God has a lot to say about our future. So before we can talk about money in the future, we need to think about the future in biblical terms. All right. God is the one who wants us to be wise and understanding about how the decisions we make today impact our lives tomorrow. Right, so when it comes to the future, Proverbs is such a great, obviously, they're, like, the point of Proverbs is wisdom, like skillful living, and ends up connecting a lot to, I think, a lot of financial principles. Proverbs 20:25 says, "It is a snare to say rashly, it is holy, and to reflect only after making vows." In that context, in this religious context, people would have vowed to give a certain amount of finances, possession, etc. They would give it to God, right? And so in that sense, they were vowing to give up maybe a certain amount of animals or a certain amount of, you know, produce or whatever else. And Proverbs says it is a snare to say that rashly, it's holy, and to reflect only after making vows. It's like when you decided that you were going to go ahead and buy that car, and then by like the second month you went, oh, you know what, I forgot that I have to make this car payment every single month. Well, it's a little late, like it's a little late to reflect on the vows that you made to whoever you bought that car from, right? We need to be able to be forward thinking. Ignorance about the future isn't bliss, it's foolishness. So we're wise to consider the future, and we're foolish not to. So playing dumb is not the way to follow Jesus' command to not worry, right? The command to not worry is not be foolish, stick your head in the sand, all right? But we do need to grow in our understanding of how God's will for us, what it is as we think about the future. So let's just think quickly about God's knowledge versus our knowledge, all right? So let's just compare the two. Here's 1 John 3:20. Whenever our heart condemns us, God is greater than our hearts, and He knows. What does God know? You know how 1 John 3:20 ends? God's greater than our hearts, and He knows, Jonathan said it, everything. All right? Here's a significant difference between you and God. You say, like, please, this is as basic as it can get. Yeah, but like sometimes we need to say these words out loud. You know a difference between your knowledge of the future and God's knowledge of the future? You don't know anything about the future, and God knows everything about the future. Like, we couldn't be more different. He knows everything, and you and I know nothing. You cannot actually tell me, it is 9:34. You can't actually tell me what 9:39 is going to hold. You can't even go 5 minutes in the future and tell me what is going to be happening at 9:39. It's like, we're still going to be sitting here in this class talking about finances. You don't know that, right? You don't have any control over the next 5 minutes. And then we start thinking about the future, and we start thinking we have control over the next 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. Are you kidding? We can't do the next minutes, all right? So God knows everything. He knows the past, the present, the future perfectly, right? Including the length of our days. And all of these things, again, these are just biblical principles that I know you know, but we have to keep them in our minds as we think about things like debt and saving. Here's Psalm 139, verse 16. Your eyes saw my unformed substance, and your book written every one of them, the days that were formed for me when as yet there was none of them. So you have a length of days that were formed for you, and you don't know how many they are, and I don't know how many there are, right? This is God's knowledge versus man's knowledge, all right? This is why even the main point in today's sermon is going to be teach us to number our days so that we can gain a heart of wisdom, right? Because we have to have an awareness of our days, and we need to be wise, right? The difference between God's knowledge and our knowledge. So if we can't know the future, how can we make decisions about it? How do you end up making financial decisions for the future when you don't know the future, when you can't even say what tomorrow is? And I think what we do is we go to God. We ask God for wisdom that is beyond ours. We ask him for perspective that is beyond ours. And again, this is where places like Proverbs are so useful for us. Because we read in Proverbs 10:4, a slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. Again, Proverbs is, as we say, not the book of promises, but the book of principles. Like, principally, this is normally how it works, right? Normally how it works, if you want to know, as you're making a financial decision, a slack hand will cause poverty. Now, obviously, there's competing forces, for instance, in American economics that say you should be able to have a slack hand and we'll take care of your poverty for you. There's all kinds of different governmental views and all these other things. But typically what happens is if you are lazy, you get poor. Like that's how it's designed. I would even argue, this is quite apart from this, this is not a class on like world economics, but I would even argue that political systems that tell people they can be lazy and not reap consequences of that, entire countries become poor. I think this is true on the individual level, and I think this is true on the whatever that macro governmental level is, right? That's not a statement based on which political party I vote for. That's a statement based on God's reality, right? So Christianity is not the opposite of Christianity is not, for instance, communism or socialism. So we need to be clear about that. Christianity, socialism, these are not like there's ways that they're opposed, but we're not like, don't get confused politically, right? But Christian virtues and values are absolutely opposed to certain communistic and socialistic values. And one of them is the concept of what happens when you work or don't work, right? That's a Christian thing, not a political thing, right? So it's just true. Slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. This is how God designed his world. Hard work is what leads to even things like riches, and that's wisdom. Wisdom has this future component to it. Being lazy today will make you poor tomorrow, whether that's an individual or an entire country. So God doesn't tell us everything about the future, but he does reveal how we should live in the present, which is hardworking and doing the things that we ought to. All right. So God's not the only one who talks about the future, though. There's all kinds of talking about the future, right? Some people are really bad at talking about the future. The clearest example, weather people. Weather people are the clearest example of people that talk about the future and so often do an awful job at it, right? They forecast and then they're wrong over and over again, and everyone's just like, ah, yeah, it's the weather though. How could they know, right? But scientists talk about the future. Economists talk about the future. Sports fans, they make predictions. Betting agencies, they all make predictions. All these people are saying, this is what we think about the future. So how should you think about advice you get about the future, particularly with your finances? All right, again, I'm not a licensed financial advisor or whatever else. So you say like, well, who should I listen to? Well, first of all, you should consider the source. right? Who should you listen to about your financial future? Well, you should consider the source. Is the source known to be honest and have integrity? Because Proverbs says, the man of integrity, Proverbs 10:9, walks securely. Right? So again, like, it's just biblical principles that you apply to people that are talking to you about your money, that are talking to you about the economics of tomorrow. Right? Consider the source. Is this somebody who's knowledgeable in what they're speaking about? Because Proverbs 10:14, you're gonna stay here in Proverbs. The wise lay up knowledge, but the mouth of fool brings ruin near. So is this somebody who has a storehouse of knowledge? Do they have experience? Proverbs 20:29 talks about gray hair being the splendor of the old. He has the idea of, like, there is a learned experience that comes as a person that's giving you advice about the future. Do they have some kind of experience or reason that the source, do they have a reason? Do you have a reason to trust them? All right? Which means you should stay away from something like, I don't know, the horoscope that tell you here's what you should invest your money in or not in, and people who are just unreliable advisors. Someone that's given bad financial advice over and over again is not the person you want to go listen to, because they said it wrong before and they're probably going to say it wrong again. All right, consider the source. Secondly, consider the content. Is this counsel that you're being given reasonable and knowledgeable of the times, or is this without substance? It's pulled out of thin air. The content is, you'll never guess how to stay at your house, make $17,000 a day, and in 3 weeks, I made this, right? And the content of that is simple, easy, lots. And when you hear those things, every one of your, like, proverbial antennas, like, should pop up and go, yeah, but wait, but that doesn't sound right. Like, the content of that, you can get a lot for a little bit of effort in a little bit of time. None of that adds up in God's economy, right? So, like, the content is off, all right? Interest rates are going to increase because it's a full moon tonight. Thank you for that. That's great content. Like, why are you giving me this? Do people's counsel have precedent, all right? We should be very careful about get-rich-quick schemes because of what they tell you. That's exactly what it is. It's get rich and it's do it quickly. Well, that's a scheme, all right? The content is get a lot for a little, all right? So consider the content. Thirdly, consider the limitations. Proverbs 27:1, don't boast about tomorrow because you don't know what a day may bring forth. People that give you ironclad guarantees that say we can't miss, this is a surefire thing, most often is. All right? I don't know if they still do it, but I still remember hearing advertisements from, like, investment companies, and they would say, it was like that real quick voice. It's all, you know how they do, like, with prescription medicine, there's all the, like, disclaimers and everything else. It used to be with investment companies that the, like, real quick voiceover person would be like, past performance does not guarantee future results. It was always like the tagline at the commercials. You guys remember those? Past performance does not guarantee future results. They're hedging their bets. They're considering their limitations, right? Because only God knows the future. So we have to make decisions about the future, and we shouldn't do it foolishly or unadvisedly, but we have to humbly and wisely seek wisdom from God's word. So all that sets us up to thinking about debt, or the idea of mortgaging the future. A definition of debt that I was given is this. Debt is getting something now by paying for it later, right? That's what debt is. Getting something now by paying for it later. All right. We try to not be overly invasive, but, you know, we're fewer today, so I can be more invasive in our lives. So I'm going to ask you to be willing to raise your hands. All right. If you're not, that's fine. All right. How many of you have some type of debt? It might be small, but you have some sort of debt. It could be good debt, bad debt, however you define that, but you have some sort of debt in your life. Anyway, if you're willing to raise your hand, let us know. All right, so I'm gonna go ahead and raise my hand because I'm willing to let you know I have some kind of debt. Now, you don't have to have debt and you don't have to be willing to tell us right now, but a lot of us have some form of debt, all right? Things like credit are sometimes a necessary way to even do business, right? All this kind of stuff. So let's think about debt. Let's think about things like borrowing. Does God forbid borrowing? So let's just start there. What does God think about debt? Well, for all of us who just raised our hands, you'll be glad to know that you can borrow money without sinning, right? So you do not just raise your hand and admit to sinning. necessarily, potentially, possibly. But borrowing is not inherently or necessarily forbidden. In the Old Testament, God actually permitted lending in the law. He put regulations on it, but God allowed for forgiving and borrowing. In Exodus 22, he talked about, if you lend money to one of my people who's needy, don't be like the money lenders and don't charge them interest. Right? So Jewish people were forbidden in the law to charge each other interest for the money they loaned to one another. All right, but clearly there was, and I say money, obviously they didn't have money in the exact same way that we did, but wealth was exchanging hands in, from one Jewish hand to another, somebody that was needy, and you weren't supposed to charge interest. In the New Testament, Jesus gives this principle in Luke 6:35. Love your enemies, do good to them, lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Right? That starts to sound a lot more like a gift, right? Lending without getting it back, that's called a gift. But no, borrowing is not necessarily or immediately forbidden. If God allowed lending, then obviously he also is permitting borrowing. But you can borrow without sinning, but you can also sin by borrowing. And there's the caveat that I alluded to just a second ago. Because Romans 14:23 says, everything that does not come from faith is sin, right? That's an example of how you can do something that is sinful by borrowing. You can do things through impatience, right? So impatience is not a fruit of the Spirit. It's not a characteristic of God. So when you are impatient, you should be concerned that you're running afoul of God's will. Greediness, right? Greed is also something that is forbidden to us as Christian people. So if you're borrowing because you are being greedy, you've now borrowed for the wrong reason, a sinful reason. Okay, so borrowing becomes sin. I think another kind of category is when we wrongly presume on God. And so obviously we have to make plans for the future, but I think we can presume on God. There's lots of things about the future where you have to make plans and commitments. We're going to talk about budgeting. We make these things. But wrongly presuming on God can mean one of two things. One, it can mean that you're sinfully attempting to obligate God to pay for your debt. Right? That would be presuming upon God. I'm going to take this debt. God, you promised you would meet all my needs. Therefore, God, you have to pay my debt, and I'm not going to. Right? We're presuming on God. We're obligating him. Right? We're going to build up our credit card debt, and God, we expect you to give us additional cash to pay it off. I don't have the money to pay the credit card debt, but God, you said you would take care of me, so you give me the money. And so when you stay in credit card debt, and now you're paying 19% on your credit card debt, and all of a sudden people are going, God, why didn't you take care of me? Well, where was God's fault in that, right? It's presuming on God. All right. You might be trusting God for something he's never promised you. That's presuming on God. So if God didn't promise you something and then you expect him to do it, you've now become presumptuous, right? We assume that God will cater to us, but sometimes we forget that God is holy, right? No, I have these standards of living and expectations, and we don't get to manipulate him. But we can also wrongly presume upon God for our debt because we're ignoring God's sovereignty over the future. All right. There's that great passage in James 4 where he says, like, come now, you who say tomorrow, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to go to the city, we're going to carry on this business. And he says, what? You don't even know what tomorrow will bring. What's your life? You're a mist. You appear for a little while and then you vanish. And instead you ought to say, if it's the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. Right? The problem with the person in James, which also is very proverbial in nature, right? But the problem of the person in James is that they had cut out if the Lord wills from it, and they were just being presumptuous. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to make this amount of money. I'm going to accomplish this in business. Right? They were presuming because they had forgotten that if it's the Lord's will, you'll live. And it's funny how James even says that. You don't even know if you're going to live. You say you're going to go to the city and do all this business. You don't even know if it's the Lord's will, you'll live and you'll do this or you'll do that. All right, he says, as it is, you boast and you brag, all such boasting is evil. All right, so does God forbid borrowing? No, not necessarily, asterisk. All right, wisdom of borrowing. Let's say you examine your motives for taking on debt. You don't find them to be sinful. So now we have to start asking, would borrowing be wise? What's wise, right? As somebody once said, Christian liberty, so being able to do something, Christian liberty also still allows for Christian stupidity, right? So just because you have the liberty to do something doesn't mean that you should. All right. How many of us like to have the option to borrow money? If you're one of those people that you say, like, I'm glad it is an option. Let me see. How many of us like to have the option? I'm raising my hand because I'm thankful that it is an option. All right. Why do we like having the option to borrow money? Just give me some reasons if you're willing. Why do we like having the option to borrow?
So we can leverage ourselves.
Okay. What else? Why do we like having the option to borrow? Okay, security.
Doesn't drain our savings.
Doesn't drain our savings. And I like having that savings. All right. Any of you like living inside a house? Like the thing with like the roof and the walls and all that? You guys like that? Now maybe some of you own your house free and clear, which, praise God, that's fantastic. But I would imagine that many people have some type of mortgage, right? I'm glad I can borrow money, because if I can't borrow money, I'm not living in the house that I'm living in right now, that my family's living in, right? I don't have the money to buy that house outright, right? And we can talk about all the different reasons that housing costs in California are what they are, but all that's immaterial. I can't live in my house if I can't borrow money, right? So there's probably a variety of reasons that we like to have the option. There's some value to having credit made available to us. It lets us provide for unforeseen emergencies, for instance. I'm glad you can borrow, because sometimes things come up you didn't even plan on, right? It allows us, for instance, to be able to provide for education, right? So you make an investment in a student loan that is then going to teach you a trade or a skill that then is going to help you pay back that student loan. Right? Businesses that start up, that cost, things cost, and you're banking on, I'm going to pay this up front. Again, debt is getting something now you're going to pay for later, and a business says, I don't have the funds right now to start up, and so I'm going to do this now and pay for it later. All right. So there are some benefits. So some of us say we like the option to borrow money. How many of us like to have debt? Oh, I'm shocked that nobody has raised their hand, right? Some of us like to have the option to borrow, but nobody raised their hand and said, I like having debt. That's nice. I enjoy that. That is fun. That's great. I love the sense of obligation. I love being in slavery to the bank. Sometimes people say, like, do you own your house or are you renting? And if I'm being cheeky, I say, well, the bank owns my house, right? Because I'm still a slave to the bank. It owns my house, right? Why don't we like to have debt? Because it's a form of servitude. Proverbs 22:7, the rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. Right? This is biblical reality. The borrower is servant to the lender. And the greater the amount you are in debt, the greater the power the lender has, right? The more sense of servitude that you feel. All right. So debt is mortgaging our future in a sense. It limits our financial flexibility. It limits options we wish we might have had. There are some people who, even just take educational debt, for instance, there are some people that build such an educational debt that then they feel like they can't move on to another stage of life if they don't pay off all their school debt first. Or you have people that get married out of college and both of them are carrying massive amounts of debt. And so they say, this doesn't even make sense for us to start our family yet because we have this huge amount of debt. And so now they're limiting their life choices because of their previous life choices. These are all realities about debt and our future. All right, so debt's not something to enter into lightly. We should never view debt as our savior, no matter how low the interest rate is or how appealing the object is. You're still going to pay it all back, including the interest, unless you borrowed from somebody that's not charging you interest. All right. We don't have things like debtor's prison or being sold into slavery here in the U.S. anymore, although that's still true in some places. But we need the reminder that just because a bank approves a loan doesn't necessarily mean that God does. And we need not confuse that. All right. So we need to make some decisions about borrowing. Why does this time go faster in this class? All right. Let's say you're thinking about taking out a loan. You're going to purchase a car. How should you think about it? Here's three general questions I'm encouraging you to ask as you make decisions about borrowing. Number one, ask, why do you need it? right? Why do you need this thing that you're going into debt for? What are the reasons? Are they God glorifying or are they possibly selfish, right? Do you need those new wheels because you're trying to make a statement that you're successful? I was giving financial counsel to a person once upon a time who had gotten into massive amounts of debt, and I said, explain the Lexus that you're driving around. And they said, I was taught in business class, if you want to be successful, you have to look successful. And so I drive this Lexus so that when I show up on sales calls, people go, that guy's successful. And I was like, okay, but you can't afford it. Like, you can't even pay the payments on it. They're going to come repo that. But hey, I'm just trying to make a splash, right? That's why he was borrowing, all right? Does that math add up? Is that actually true and God honoring, all right? All right. You might need to buy a car to help you get to work. And so you go, yes, this makes sense. I need to spend more time building relationships. So I need to be able to drive to see people. Okay, like, but why? Why do you want this thing you're going into debt for? Why do you need it? Secondly, can you afford it? Can you afford it? Do you have the means to pay for it? All right, we said last week, God is not calling you to a lifestyle where your expenses are greater than your income. That's not what God is calling you to. Right? So if you take out a loan, have you assessed the risk? Like, can you afford it? Can you afford the mortgage payment? Can you afford how much that car is going to cost you ultimately? Whatever you're going into debt for, can you afford it? All right. Have you considered any other alternatives before getting into debt? For instance, can you bring in any additional income? Maybe there's another job you need to take. Maybe you need to liquidate some other assets. Maybe you need to cut back on some expenses. Maybe you need to go ahead and get rid of your 7 different TV subscription things and save some money. I don't know, whatever. Like, what is it? Maybe you need to buy a cheaper car. Like, yes, I need a car. Okay, but it doesn't mean you need that car. Like, can you afford it? We need to ask, right? People that think that's an outmoded question. I feel like a lot of American society feels like that's an outdated question. Can you afford it? But this is the question that you should be asking yourself. All right. Impatience, again, is not a fruit of the Spirit. All right. Your wisdom should give you patience when it comes to debt. So can you afford it? And have you done things like assess the risks associated with your debt? What if you can't pay it back? What would that look like? All right. Thirdly, have you sought counsel? Have you sought godly counsel from others that you know and trust? All right. It goes back to what we said last week, that we should be doing even money things in community. Right. Plans fail. Proverbs 15:22. Plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors, they succeed. Right. So have you sought counsel from other people? All right. Quickly, we'll talk about living in debt. What if you're already in debt? You're in a lot of debt. You're in too much debt. What do you do? I mean, the easy answer for a non-financial advisor person like me is to say, what needs to happen is you need to pay it back. Right. Now, how that happens and how that works out is much trickier. I've heard of people like cutting up credit cards. I've heard of them like putting them on. Who was it? It was Dave Ramsey or somebody was like, take your credit cards, place them on a cookie sheet, preheat the oven to 350 degrees, slide cookie sheet into oven. There, I've helped you take care of a lot of your problem. Obviously, that's too simplistic, but we do that. The longer answer is you have to reflect on why you have so much debt, come up with some kind of manageable plan to get out of that debt. Like, this is not a place that you want to stay. And so you've made some choices that got you there. So maybe let's learn from those choices and not just repeat them, and then some kind of plan to move forward. Because if you're in like crushing debt, you can't just, it's not just a, we'll take care of this next week or next month. You might need to set up a 5-year plan to try to work your way out of that debt if you're living in it. All right. So something to consider. All right. I do think that God provides us with a variety of ways of help, even in situations where there's a lot of debt or even crippling debt. Again, sometimes it's a friend, sometimes it's counsel, but God provides a lot of ways for help. And if you heard the story, it's one of those funnier stories, I think, but the story goes that there was this guy who lived by a river, and he heard a radio report that the river was going to flood and that everyone should evacuate. It came over the radio, but he didn't leave, and he said, God will save me. And waters began to rise, And along came a guy in a rowboat, and he came past the guy's house, and he said, "Jump in my rowboat, I'll help you." And the guy said, "I don't need your rowboat, God's gonna save me." And sure enough, the water kept rising, flooded his house. He went up on his roof, and along came a helicopter, and they lowered a line, and they said, "Grab the line, and we'll save you." And he said, "I don't need your helicopter, God will save me." Right? And the waters continued to rise, and in the end, the man drowned. He gets to heaven, and he says, "God, why didn't you save me?" And God says, "What do you mean? I sent you a radio report, I sent you a rowboat, and I sent you a helicopter." Right? God uses means, right? And God provides a variety of means to help us understand things like our debt and how to deal with it and how to move forward. All right, savings. Since I love talking about savings, I saved it for no more time left. We'll just briefly, I don't want to cut this lesson in half. So Proverbs says, "Go to the ant, you sluggard, consider its ways and be wise. It stores up in summer and gathers its fruit in its harvest." So there is prudence in and planning for the future. And there's dangers in not saving for the future, like unanticipated expenses or somebody getting sick, or, you know, we tell our kids this all the time, everything breaks except for God. So that car of yours, it's going to break. That house of yours, the water heater, the air conditioner, the clothes you're wearing, the shoes you're wearing, everything breaks, right? The toy that you're really enjoying right now, it's going to break. Like, everything breaks. And so it would be wise to consider the future, right? We talked, I think, a lot last time about hoarding. So I'll just briefly say there are dangers in hoarding. So when we talk about saving, we're not talking about just hoarding. We're not talking about collecting all of our money bags underneath us and going, "This is my place of safety and my place of happiness," right? The guy that was tearing down barns and building bigger barns, and he was all about his future, God says, "You fool, tonight your soul will be required of you," right? There's danger, there's hazards in just hoarding things for ourselves. Whoever trusts in his riches, Proverbs 11:28 says, will fall, right? So when we're talking about saving, we're not talking about just hoarding up, all right? So, how much should we save? How do we evaluate how much that should be? I think, like a lot of things, we wish we had a Bible verse that said, you should be saving 2% of your income. You should be saving 6% of your income. By the time you are 54, you should have this amount of income, right? And that's not how God's word works, right? How does God reveal things to us in his word? He gives us principles, and then he tells us to rely on his spirit and wisely live things out, all right? So you can trust God and save for the future. You can do both at the same time. Because the goal of saving for us is this: we want to be faithful. God's going to provide, but he gives us brains to use, and he asks us to live according to his principles, including how much we save and even the motivation, like what are we saving for. All right, so here's the deal. Only God knows the future. But he's revealed to us how to live wisely today to prepare for tomorrow. So as we think about debt, we think about saving, let's remember, we're trying to lay up treasures in heaven. So how does the amount of debt you're taking, how does the amount that you're saving, how does that line up with having your treasures in heaven and not having your treasures here on earth? Okay? All right, I've left 3 minutes for questions. And I didn't really talk much about savings, but... questions? Comments, agreement, disagreement, you want to re-emphasize, you want to, whatever. No, you're good. Yes.
I was going to say, if you don't save, you can't be used by God to help others.
Right.
If you're in debt, you just can't be someone who needs someone's name.
Yeah, so that's a great Christian motivation for doing things like getting out of debt or things like saving. Like, I want to help somebody in need, and if I'm the one in need, then I'm the one that needs, like, which is fine. Like, all of us are at different, like, there's stages in life when it's right for you to be the one that is helped, right? We should be humble enough and honest enough to say, like, that's fine for that to be. But I also want to make wise decisions so that I can be the one that's the helper and not the helpee. Yeah, that's a great motivation for saving and considering our debt load. We even talked about this back when we talked about the idea of tithes and offerings, and are we supposed to give 10%? And there's a reality that, you know, every Christian has to work through this in their own mind, but there is a point when you are so crippled by debt that I would even argue pastorally, you shouldn't even be giving to the church. Like, that's how crippled you are. Like, you shouldn't even be putting any money in an offering plate, because you're now so, like, some priorities have been so flipped, or your situation is so dire, and we need to be okay with that, because we give as God has prospered, and now you go, all right, I need to make some significant changes, because God, I was living beyond what God had prospered, and now I need to flip that situation around. So I'm not suggesting that it's a good habit to get in to not give financially, whether it's to the church or to other people around you. That's something you want to remedy, but there are times when, it's one thing to give out of your poverty. Giving out of poverty is something the Bible affirms, right? You give out of your poverty. But I would argue the Bible doesn't necessarily argue that you should give out of your indebtedness. See, there's a difference between poverty and indebtedness. So, and again, I feel like our country has kind of obliterated some of those distinctions, right? The people that are poor are the people that have massive credit card debt. No, it's not just an issue of poverty at this point. It's an issue of indebtedness, and those are not the same categories. Yeah?
I think we need to be reminded, too, that when people are trying to help, so many times, I can't take that.
Yeah.
And I remember one time, and they say, if you're robbing me from a blessing,
yeah,
that's kind of use that one, that's fine.
That's great. Yep.
You need to put a perspective back sometimes to that, God asked us to do this, and therefore.
Yep, that's great. That's a good word.
I think it all boils down to motive.
Motive, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what tomorrow holds. I cannot make my smart decision of the right house, the little
right
house, still a presumption.
That's right.
So, and I like what she said, that we don't want to be so on the edge that we have no margin to help anybody.
Yeah. Yep.
So you really have to examine your motives of what you want.
Yep.
Even tithing, in a sense, it's out of faith.
Yeah. Right. The money's out of your hands. How's it going to come back? Is it going to come back? Am I going to be okay without it coming back? Yeah, so it's a good word. Yeah, Carol.
Don't fall into the trap of comparing yourself with others. Don't think that God owes you what he's giving somebody else.
That's a good word. That is a good word. I should have started with questions a lot sooner. That was good. Yep. I do think there's so much, even back when the first lesson, we talked about the idea of, like, it's all his anyway. This just has staggering repercussions for your debt and your saving and everything else. So. Okay. Oh, this is helpful as we think about these things. Next week is men's and women's Sunday school. So men, we will plan to be in the gym. Ladies will be here in the lobby, as the Lord wills, and hope to see you then. Thanks for being here this morning.